How can you get a home when the bank says no? This podcast is dedicated to the 1 in 10 homeowners denied each year by the banks. Welcome to the Pre-Approved Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Pre-Approval Podcast. Hey, Nick, how are you doing?
Hey, good. Thanks, Adam. Good.
We have, you know, a bunch of different individuals who are trying to get a home loan but are often told no. We were connecting on our mastermind call a while ago, and you mentioned using the rent to own or lease option or lease purchase before. And this, again, maybe was a while back, but can you share a little bit about that story, when it was and how it came about?
Yeah, it was weird. It was actually completely unintentional. It was back in 2006, excuse me, 2006, 2007, I think, just before the great, you know, the last big crash or financial crash. But we were looking to move house, but we weren't in any great rush because we had I'm a photographer, and we had a separate building behind our old house that we were using as a studio and as an office. So it was kind of a tie, really. We couldn't really sell our house and then start looking for a new one because it was doubling up as office space as well. So I was reading the newspaper, and I basically, shows how long ago it was, and I basically saw a house for sale around the corner, and it had always been a dream of mine to live on the water, and this house was on the water, and it seemed in the right price, and showed a little picture of it. So I didn't actually mention anything to my wife or anybody in the studio, and I just took off and drove off around the corner. It was only about a mile away.
And what did the ad say?
The ad just showed a little house for sale. It seemed like a regular size house for sale on the water, and it happened to be in the neighborhood that I wanted to be in. The area our business is located on Sanibel Island, which is about 4 or 5 miles away. And we wanted to be in this particular area just because our kids go to school in this area. My business is on Sanibel Island, so it's really the logical choice. Is there's like a 2 or 3 square mile area that we want to live in, and finding stuff on the water that's reasonably priced is kind of hard, even was back then. So when I saw one that was reasonably priced, I was like, oh, let's go and take a look at it, because normally the stuff that's reasonably priced is normally wrecked, or there's something, you know, it's really small, or it's really old, or there's obviously problems with it. So unless you want to sort of tear down and rebuild, then, you know, it's hard to find that middle ground of nice house, you know, nice lot on the water, you know. So I got in a car and drove around the corner, and as I pulled down this road, I knew this road. I'd walked down there before, but I looked on the right-hand side, and it was just one of those cases of having a look at the house and looking at the picture in the paper, and it was like completely different. I mean, it was so small. It was ridiculously small. But in the paper, you had no concept of that. So I looked at it. I was like, well, that won't work. But as I turned around, it's in a cul-de-sac. There was a house opposite, and it had a sign in the front yard saying rent to own, lease option, and a price, just in a Sharpie, just on a white sign.
And that was the rent price or the purchase price, do you recall?
It had both. It had a purchase price and a rent price, both which seemed fairly reasonable. And so I could tell the place was empty. I had to walk around it. And I was like, wow, this is actually kind of interesting, because it would fit two bills. Like we could sell our house and be able to get, you know, the house we wanted if we could rent to own. So anyway, I went back to my wife. I said, hey, let's jump in the car, come and take a look at this, because this is pretty incredible. Literally, we came straight back, had a look, and my wife Laurie agreed. And I think it said something like it was 501,000. I'm not sure if the numbers are important. 515,000 or something, and then the rent to own was $2,200 a month or something like that. So we talked about it, and we thought, well, this could be good, because we could move in here, see if we like it, see if it's really the house. We've got nothing to lose, really, and if we'll sell our house. And if we like it, and then we can move in. Well, little did we know that right after that was when the crash happened, the financial crash. But, you know, again, it worked in our favor. We're still here to this day, and we still own the old house that we had before, so.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so you were living in a home, thinking about moving, went to go see a home, said it didn't work, turned around, and lo and behold, there's this rent to own. And where you're at, the real estate price, you know, is very different than, let's say, where I'm at in the Midwest, where if someone saw a $515,000 home, it's one of a kind and it's on its own, you know, mansion island, whereas where real estate's kind of a premium there, where you get the ocean, you get some, you know, unique views. That's kind of the difference. So if I'm listening to you right, it was listed at, hey, you could buy this for 515 and you could rent it for about 2200 a month was what was written on the sign.
Exactly. Exactly. It might have been actually, I think it was 530 was the original price on there. Okay. And then, yeah. And so the area is basically, there's a big difference between the prices of houses that are not on the water and that are on the water, you know? And then there's also a lot of associated fees with, if you go into an HOA where, you know, you're on the water, then it's like ridiculous amounts of money every month because you're paying for an HOA. So for me, I didn't want an HOA. I thought it was a bit of a waste of money and I'm not interested in that whole community concept. So I was looking for a specific house. I was looking for a house that wasn't in an HOA, but on the water. So yeah, that when you look at the water, because they're not digging canals anymore, they're not making any more waterfront homes. So those that are there hold a pretty premium, you know. So
did this one officially check that then, that it was waterfront, or when you turned around in the cul-de-sac, is this technically off the waterfront from that perspective?
No, it was on the waterfront and excuse me. Sorry, so we knew that cul-de-sac, actually all the houses on that cul-de-sac are on the water. So there's a canal running behind the houses on the left and there's a canal running behind the houses on the right. And then when you get to the end of the cul-de-sac, there's an intersecting canal that takes you out to a big river called the Caloosahatchee River, which is about a mile or two from the ocean. So
sounds like a wonderful home. So what did that look like where you said, hey, you know, Mrs., let's take a look at this from that point to actually, what were the next steps of how you went about that conversation and getting into the agreement?
Well, the next steps were, you know, well, we weren't really looking for a house. So to initially convince my wife that we needed one was something else, but we actually both looked at it and it did need a lot of work doing, but the basic shape or the layout of the house was decent. So but it needed all new floors, it needed a lot of work, but unlike other ones that we'd looked at that were structurally limiting, meaning, you know, it might have been 1200 square feet with no setbacks or room for expansion, this one was on a three lots or a lot and a half, so I had plenty of land around it. It was nice and light and airy, although the tile and everything in it was old. So the big question was, would we want to take on another project house, because we'd just come from a project house. But being the suckers that we are, we decided that would be a good idea.
Okay, so you decided to go for it. What did that, I don't know if you remember like what the paperwork was. Was there like negotiations and what did the, do you remember what the agreement and things looked like?
Yeah, so we had, I think we signed up for a year. We put down a first and last on the as you would with a rental property. And then we had a year to exercise that option. So we moved in and we decided straight away that we fell in love with it. And we wanted to actually go forward with it and start trying to renovate the property. And obviously you didn't want to do that if it wasn't yours yet. So we moved ahead with it. And basically in that time period, that was exactly when the economy crashed. So we had our house on the market, our other house, and we weren't getting any bites from it. We started dropping the price on it and still we didn't really have much luck on it. The guy in the house that we're in now, basically he came, I said, you know, you're going to have to come down on your price if you want to. So he came down to about 500,000 and then he basically said, that's as low as I can go, because his mortgage was 499,000. And I said, well, we could be at odds here. This could be a problem because obviously, you know, everything's crashing, the prices are going down, I can't sell my place. So it went on for another 6 months or so. And people don't believe me when I say this, but he came to us and said, have you ever heard about a short sale? And people don't believe me when I say that I'd never heard of it. But I honestly, at that time, I don't think a lot of realtors had even heard of it. And it had to be explained to me what a short sale was. And at that point, there was nothing to lose, really, because like we were in the place, we were renting it. We could just move out and take all that stuff and go. And we've just lost the rent of, you know, losing of what we had in it. So we decided to go for it. And basically we were advised against it, actually. People were saying, I don't know. It was literally thought as some sort of sketchy transaction. The more we looked into it, the more we were like, well, we've got nothing to lose. We can always say no, and we can always walk away from it. So that's what we did. We proceeded with the short sale, where he could at least save his credit somewhat and walk away from a place. I think he'd got divorced, so he really wanted to get out of the place, and it had been empty for a long time. So
in an ideal situation that didn't have a housing market crash, your intent was, hey, let's sell our existing home, then either buy this one all cash or get a mortgage. Now that we have that one off, now we can exercise our option at whatever we feel it's comfortable at, or that it would appraise for. And everything would have likely gone according to plan that way had the crash not occurred. But because the crash occurred, and because you had the option to buy it, but that you weren't obligated to buy it, you could have just walked away, even though you had an existing home, but the home that you were then living in, you really, you know, weren't attached to that price. You had the option to buy it, but not, you know, you didn't have to.
Exactly. 100%. So we were in a sort of win-win situation, really. Yes, we would have been out of the $2,200 a month that we'd spent living there, but we would have put that down to a good experience and just being, because we didn't rent out our other house because we were still using it for the studio. So all we would have been out was the $2,200 a month and utilities and stuff that we were paying in rent. So we just put that down to an experience, and we would have had a year or two of boating and having some fun. We had nothing to lose.
And I actually didn't know this, but this is actually the house that you're in right now.
Yes, it's the one I'm in right now. Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So from 2006, 2007 to, 14, 15 years later. So maybe talk through for those, because I haven't had to go through a short sale. Do you want to talk through what that looked like?
Yeah. So basically, they go to the bank, they being the mortgage. Actually, it's the realtor to start with, or the owner went to the bank and said, listen, market's crashed. Any chance we can short sale the house? I want to stay in good standing with you. So then it went through a period where they would assess. And at that time, it was a very slow period, which is why we were there for quite a bit after. But they would come up with a number, and that number would be, okay, we're willing to let the house sell for X amount of dollars, and you can walk away. The previous owner could walk away relatively intact. I think, obviously it affects his credit, but not like it would if he'd have just walked away and dumped the
kind of back. Foreclosure or something like that.
Exactly. So we were thinking, oh, what would it be worth? Maybe if they came off 50,000, we were already 30,000 down. So he'd come from 530. Now it's at 500. The house was initially valued at like 650. Or 575 or something like that. So it was already seemed like a good deal. And then they came back with a number that absolutely shocked us. They said that they would let it go for 350.
Oh, wow.
So we were like, yeah, we'll definitely go for that. Yeah, for sure. Now, in hindsight, things got a lot worse after that. And we managed to seal the deal. And over the next month or two, we managed to buy the house for 350. But things did go worse. So although we thought we really got an amazing, amazing, amazing deal, looking back on it, maybe it wasn't as amazing as I'm not complaining. But at the time, we thought we really stole it. And I'm not sure that was the case, because things were still going downhill. Mm-hmm. But fast forward 10 years, now the valuation is probably somewhere around the 700 mark, 750. So
That was going to be my next question. So, you know, with real estate and time is usually your biggest friend, where that was probably the largest correction that most people in our generation or in almost any generation have seen, besides, you know, maybe some dot-com, or even if someone was like around in the Great Depression where things dropped. But really, you were in the heart of it, where prices really dropped like 50%. And now 15 years later, they're not only back, you know, they regain the 50%, but then are potentially even higher than that if you were to stick it out and not, like you say, sell at the low point or buy at the high point, or however you want to look at it.
Yeah. And the big thing for us, I mean, we were fortunate in as much as we had to sell the original house in order to move in, really. But then the price had come down so much from originally 530, now down to 350, that we privately borrowed 50,000 to put down on this house, and then paid that back over the next year. And that allowed us to keep both. So now we still have the rental house that used to be our own house, and we have this, and we paid back that 50,000 over, it was a personal loan from a family member, over the next year. So it worked out well. Yeah, it's worked. And all the money we've put into it has just been piecemeal as we've done it over the years. It's not like money borrowed or anything like that, you know.
So. Pretty cool. So how did you support all of this? Because I know a lot of people would you know, likely have to have some sort of income or job to either get approved for a bank or be able to do their own improvements. Do you want to share a little bit what Nick was going through and then what you guys are doing now?
Yeah, we've had a photography business, and we've had it for, I'm from England originally. We moved here in 1999, so this was around 2007. The business was doing very well. I mean, we lived in a modest house. The house was only a $120,000 house when we first bought it. So we didn't, our debt ratio wasn't high or anything, and we had a good income. So we were fortunate in that respect. And the business was doing very well. And even when it did, the business declined a bit during, obviously during a recession, as any business would, but we managed to keep our profit margins up, and we still managed to expand the business to a certain extent where we didn't get hit too badly. We just changed some of the things around. We brought some of our processes in-house that made us more profitable and stuff like that. So it enabled us the ability to have that extra money to rent the property while we still own the other one without renting that one out.
So you've done some photography, and I've seen some really cool videos that you post on social media about that. And then you kind of have a new thing with the guide. Do you want to share a little bit about those two with some of your viral videos and what you're kind of working on now?
Yeah, so the we've been through challenges before, as we've been talking about, back in 2007, 2008 with the economy then. And now we've obviously got the corona virus has obviously affected us. We're on a tourist island. Sanibel Island is on the southwest coast of Florida. And while we still remain busy, a big thing is that we're in in-person sales. So basically, people will have their family portraits taken on the beach, and they'll come in and they'll be in a sales room, and we'll sell pictures to them, and that's how our revenue is derived. Now, if we take that element out of the equation, our bottom line drastically reduces. So when COVID hit, we were actually closed completely. Obviously, it was leading up to that, and we couldn't really have people coming in, but then we totally couldn't have people. We couldn't even operate for, I think in this particular area, it was about 50 days, 55 days. And Laurie and I, my wife and I, have always been busy. We've always looked for stuff to do. We're not sort of sitting around type, you know. Decided to go out, and just, we could go outside, you just couldn't be around people. So we just went onto the beaches and started filming with a drone, and then posting the videos just for the people that had to cancel their trips here. And it would just be time, a simple 2-minute run down the beach with a drone and a timestamp, and just saying, welcome for here's Sanibel today. Hope everyone's doing well. And we got such a great response back from that. I think in 55 days we made 45 videos, and they got more and more intense. Like they were longer, they were more, they contained more information. There was, we did things about the beaches, about RV resorts, and all different types of videos. And we had such a great response and such great feedback from it that we've carried it on even after it opened back up. So we set up a website to host all these videos that we'd made and a YouTube channel. And the website is called the SANCAP Guide, or the Sanibel Captiva Guide. So it's the sancapguide.com, San for Sanibel and Cap for Captiva, which are the two main islands which we're on. And so now we've housed all that information. We've had blog writers come in. We've written blogs ourselves. And we're trying to make it into this really giving type of information that is just complete. So if you look for basically where you can camp on the island, there'll be a video, there's a whole article written about it, there's pictures of where you can camp, there's all the descriptions, what you need to know, and with the hope of just being a genuine place where it's a benefit to everybody on the island, not just whether it's visitors, businesses, everybody. And it's been successful. It's something we really enjoyed doing, and now we're in the process of taking it to the next step. Now, obviously, the pesky side of having to earn a living interfered with the fun that we were having with this. So, you know, when we're busy over Thanksgiving and Christmas and all that time, we really have to put it on the back burner because we have to concentrate on what makes our money. But we're in the process. We enjoyed the process so much that we're going to try and monetize it in certain ways so that we can actually finance it and do these videos and make this content on a regular basis so that it doesn't hurt us financially as much. So
I think that's pretty cool where you're pivoting. What I've noticed from doing some of these interviews and talking with the people that we help is it's normally entrepreneurs, creative thinkers, self-employed individuals that are really looking at whether it's contract for deed or lease options or trying to use private money. Because I don't know if it's just you think differently than the normal employee mindset where like, hey, I can only get, you know, something from a bank, or if COVID happens or if a recession happens, the entrepreneur in you or the business, you know, mind can kind of think, oh, where are we going to pivot to and what are we going to do next? And so it is interesting that there's a common thread between maybe creative financing and entrepreneurship in general on where, you know, a lot of the customers are potentially finding us or people that have used that strategy. And so I know you maybe haven't used it in a while, but it was kind of interesting to see where, you know, you're coming over, moving to Florida, looking at this and just being like, hey, here's just an opportunity. You're maybe not scared of it. You took advantage of it and you kind of got the downside protection from a lease option. And then it turned out to be even more in your favor when they did the short sale. And now, you know, come 15 years later, you're hopefully, I don't know if the home is paid off or if you still have a mortgage on it, but now you're sitting on, you know, quite a bit of equity, all from a potential decision to, you know, get into something that you were maybe a little bit uncomfortable with or unfamiliar with at the time. I imagine, you know, back then there was very little education on lease options, let alone short sales.
Yeah, you're 100% right. And I think that is the biggest difference between entrepreneurs and people that are happy in their jobs and just like the security of turning up to work. I think entrepreneurs, by their very nature, are put up, are given sets of problems on a daily basis that quite often need unconventional responses, you know. And I think from going through that first period of, you know, of being open to an alternative type of financing was definitely something that, you know, it's not for everybody, but I can't stress enough how I think the ways of financing have changed so much that I had somebody mention that they were looking for a loan recently, and they said they were waiting for somebody to get back to them. They were waiting. The bank wasn't being very forthcoming, and I just sat there. And you know, you don't give advice where it's not asked for, but I just couldn't help thinking to myself, what are you even thinking about? Just leaving your whole destiny in this one person's hands that's sitting in a bank that's using an algorithm to answer whether or not your life moves forward as you wish it should. I honestly think you should explore every avenue and don't let, you know, bash down doors if you need to, or go with private money or do whatever you need to do to make it happen. So
I basically have option A, option B, option C, and not just sitting here crossing your fingers being like, all right, are we going to get it or are we not? And that can be a large bank, a local credit union. It could be a private individual. Like you said, there's all kinds of options, and that's what we're hoping to bring some education, you know, forth, because I think everyone just thinks I can go to the bank and if they say no, I'm screwed. And so hopefully, you know, everyone knows that there's more than that.
Yeah, that's, I think it's so, so important. And even if you do have a relationship with a bank, I can't stress this enough. If you have a personal relationship with John Smith at the bank, just remember that that personal relationship doesn't really go into much, because now the banks are so algorithm aligned that it could be the greatest relationship in the world. So even if you do have a certain avenue that you would like to get money from, I would still back it up on a second, third and fourth basis, and leave the choice in your hands, so that if push comes to shove, you can discount three of the four and just go, okay, well, this is the one that's going to work for us. This is on the time frame that we want. Yeah, I can't stress that enough. I think it's days have gone where you have to be at the mercy of a bank, you know.
Well, awesome. I know I want to be, you know, we're wrapping up on maybe, you know, close to half an hour. Just wanted to say thank you, Nick, for, you know, joining, sharing your story. If people want to find you, they can, you know, click on some of the show notes here on the SandCap Guide to learn more about Nick and his story if you ever think about taking a vacation. And then again, just thanks for coming on the podcast, Nick.
Hey, man, no problem. My pleasure. Happy to do it, and good luck with everything you're doing. I know you've got a great cause that you're doing. I think you're doing great things with the business and how you're doing the financing. So I wish you all the best for that, Adam.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
All right. Cheers, man. Thank you.
Later.
Thanks so much for tuning into this episode. You can always learn more by reaching out to us at homeequitypartner.com. Have a good day.